Good evening, and welcome to the local news. Today is Tuesday, March 31st, and I'm Nat Cardos reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, after nice weather over the weekend, Humboldt gets first storm in over a month. Sangha Tattoo and Piercings in Eureka vandalized for a second time in their current location. And the second annual Humboldt Radical Social Forum to feature global human rights advocates in Arcata. So stay tuned. Those stories and more coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkyon, Wailaki, Wiat, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection these tribes have to this region.
After weeks of fairly nice weather throughout the region, Humboldt is now seeing its first proper storm in a little over a month. Today has been seeing some drizzle throughout Humboldt, and we can expect to see some proper rain coming in tomorrow with even some thunderstorms. Throughout Humboldt, most areas can expect roughly 100% chance of rain starting roughly at noon, according to the National Weather Service in Eureka. KMUD News spoke with Jacob Boomsma, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Eureka, for more information.
We've been having some of these kind of light showers, pretty much just sprinkles. The rain's not really reaching the ground, except in a few areas to the north and to the south. But we're going to transition from that into a more proper frontal passage tonight into tomorrow. So we'll be getting more widespread rain in Humboldt specifically. That is another 1 to 2 inches of rain, some locally higher amounts in the mountains. And up in Del Norte, you might get a little bit more, maybe like 2 to 3 inches or so of rain. So first real dose of rain in about a month or so for the area.
Along with the rain, snow may also be found in the high mountains of Del Norte, Humboldt, Trinity, and portions of Mendocino counties into Thursday. Snow will initially fall at around 5,000 to 5,500 feet on Wednesday, but could fall to 3,300 feet to 4,000 feet by Thursday morning. However, most snow is expected to fall for Del Norte County Mountains and the Trinity Alps.
Right now, it's just issued for Northern Trinity County above 4,000 feet, so that would really just impact Scott Mountain Pass on Highway 3 north of Weaverville. But there is a chance or after the front moves through Wednesday and the cooler air comes in Wednesday night, we could get some lower snow levels down to maybe as low as 2,500 feet. The precipitation's also going to taper off at this time. So even though some of these areas like Berry Summit and Collier Tunnel on 199 and 299 could see some snow if there's some precipitation, it's just it's not going to be a lot of snow. It could be like an inch or two max.
Snow accumulations may make it difficult to drive on Highway 3 at Scott Mountain Pass, as well as at higher elevation passes on the Highways 36 and 299. Be sure to carry chains as you drive through these areas and be ready for delays. On March 28th, the new Harris General Store located on Bell Springs Road, near Alder Point, announced that they would be closing after 30 years of operation. The close comes as much of Southern Humboldt continues to feel the economic squeeze. KMUD News reached out to owners Kim Phelps and Rob Gelman, who sent the station the following statement. Quote, "Dear friends and community, after much reflection, many long conversations, and every effort we could possibly make, Rob and I have made the difficult decision to close our The New Harris General Store. This has not been an easy choice. For nearly 30 years, 27 years with doors open, many years in preparation, this store has been far more than a business to us. It has been a place of service, connection, friendship, and community. It has been one of the great honors of our lives to welcome you here, serve you, and be a part of the everyday rhythm of this place we love. We have done everything we could to keep the store open. We have poured our time, our energy, our hearts, and our resources into it, even working without pay at times, and investing more than we will ever recover financially. In the end, we had to face the reality that it is no longer sustainable to continue. There is real sadness in this ending. There's also relief knowing that we gave it everything we had. We can close this chapter with clear hearts, knowing how much love and care lived here. We want you to know how deeply grateful we are for your support over all these years. Thank you for your loyalty, your kindness, your stories, your friendship, and your trust. Thank you for allowing us to serve you and to be woven into the life of this community for so long. Watching our community change and dwindle has been hard, and saying goodbye to this chapter is painful. But we are not leaving. We love this community deeply, and we will continue to be here, redirecting our energy into new ways of doing what we love and supporting the place and people we care about. From the bottom of our hearts, thank you for close to 30 years of love and connection. We will always treasure the memories, the relationships, and the privilege of having you part of our lives. End quote. The new Harris General Store will continue to be open from 11 to 5 Monday through Friday for a few more weeks until they close their doors for good. At approximately 1 a.m. this morning, Sangha Tattoo and Piercing in Eureka was vandalized by an unidentified individual who was seen on security footage posted to Sangha's Instagram account, parked outside of the business, and approached with what appeared to be a sledgehammer before proceeding to smash the front windows. KMON News spoke with Jackie Silva, co-owner of Sangha, as well as resident piercer, for more information about the incident.
Yeah, it happened like at 1 something in the morning, and unfortunately, like, the glass sensors on our windows didn't go off, and EPD was doing like kind of neighborhood rounds later on in the morning, and they noticed the broken windows, and then that's when we got notified from there. So yeah, kind of wild.
Didn't something similar happen right when you guys moved into your new location?
That one was different, I guess. Like, you know, that had fire involved. So, and yeah, we had just moved into like our new location at that time. So yeah, kind of weird. I don't think it's the same person based on our camera footage that we now have, because at that time we didn't have cameras up when we first moved in. But I don't know. Apparently, I just found out that there's a thrift store like around the corner from us, and they just got vandalized on Thursday as well, and their windows got busted too. Kind of, yeah, I don't know if there's something in the air or what's going on, but yeah, but either way, it's like not how we wanted to start our work week, you know?
This isn't the first time Sangha's been vandalized at this location. Back in 2022, after they moved to their new location on F Street and before they could have their grand opening, someone allegedly threw a Molotov cocktail through their glass window, causing damage to the shop. Unfortunately, at the time, they did not have security cameras installed to catch the perpetrator. The current damages they're looking at could be well over $1,000.
Oh gosh, we have no clue. Eureka Glass came by to take some measurements, and we're hoping to get an estimate, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's like thousands of dollars, considering we have like two big windows and a couple small windows. You know, the big windows are going to be quite costly. So, glass, you know, there's so many businesses in our area that deal with this also, and so it's not cheap. So, but I can imagine it being like probably like thousands of dollars.
And so what are the steps moving forward? What are you guys planning to do?
Moving forward, you know, we're just trying to get, like, make the space a little safe. So, like, removing all the broken glass, getting things boarded up, and then just kind of starting the process from there as to, like, you know, getting the actual glass repaired. And then EPD took their report, and, luckily our fellow business neighbors have cameras as well. So they're really, you know, they've been awesome in trying to get footage as well. So we're very grateful for their support.
And once the glass is cleaned up, are you guys remaining open?
Yes. So luckily, nothing was stolen, which was great. Right now, for me, my piercing room, unfortunately, I do have the big storefront windows. So I won't be able to work today, but once things are boarded up, I should be fine for tomorrow. And we are still, you know, open for business. It's just we're just trying to get things all boarded up and stuff. So
as of now, piercing services are unavailable, but the shop remains open. The shop is currently working with the Eureka Police Department to figure out who did it and attempt to get some closure. On April 11th, the Redwood Peace and Justice Coalition will host the second annual Radical Social Forum from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Arcata Presbyterian Church. The Humboldt Radical Social Forum is an event with the aim to discuss radical politics in Humboldt, largely focusing on the ongoing genocide in Gaza and informing locals on how they can help from here in the States. KMON News spoke with Sean Leon, press secretary for the Redwood Peace and Justice Coalition, for more about the event.
So this coming Saturday, 11th of April, we have the second annual Humboldt Radical Social Forum, which is obviously it's the second annual. So we've been doing this only one other time, and we're really looking forward to doing it again. Now, last year, we started it as we thought that it was just really important to have a annual forum that focused on radical politics here in Humboldt. Now, certainly, you know, we have a changing Humboldt. You know, Humboldt's been known for a lot of things historically, environmental sciences, marijuana, other things. But now we have Cal Poly Humboldt. And so probably, you know, we're going to see a changing Humboldt with all these different factors. And so it's important that we not just expect that Humboldt would just always be the kind of place that we would want to live, but we actually want to be responsible to make a good place that we want to live and raise families. So the Humboldt Radical Social Forum focuses on politics, radical in the sense of going to the root. Radical, the etymology of the root radical actually means going to the root. And so that's the kind of analysis that we want to put forward, is this wholesome analysis that looks at the whole tree, the whole structure, including the roots, and really dives into that. And so obviously now it's funny that that word has come to mean extremist, perhaps by people in authority who don't really want us to look at the whole thing and analyze things wholesomely.
The event will feature many keynote speakers calling in from the West Bank via video link to speak about different aspects of pro-Palestinian advocacy. Some speakers include the co-founder of the International Solidarity Movement and participant on the Global Samud Flotilla, Huwaida Araf, as well as Issa Omro, founder of the Youth Against Settlements and recipient of the 2024 Right Livelihood Award. Here's Leon with more on the speakers.
We have, for example, Huwaida Araf, who is a Palestinian-American civil rights attorney, and she's also co-founder of the International Solidarity Movement, which is one of these leading groups within the International Solidarity Movement. And she's done a lot of these global flotillas. She's been like the prime organizer on some of them, and she's even been in two last year, and she's actually going to address us from the upcoming flotilla that's going to start here in just a couple of weeks. We also have, for example, Issa Omro. He is the founder of Youth Against Settlements, and he also was awarded the Right Livelihood Award in 2024, and he's just been an amazing advocate, activist in the West Bank. So he's going to be zooming in from the West Bank and addressing us. He's, you know, gone through all sorts of torture. He's been detained, attacked, evicted, and subjected to judicial harassment. I mean, you know, he's committed to nonviolence, and a lot of people believe that, you know, if there's two types of groups, and if you commit to nonviolence, then they'll leave you alone. But that's not the case, obviously. With Issa Omro, we see, you know, he's been committed to nonviolence, but he's still been harassed and subjected to torture and these other things. So, you know, just committing to nonviolence in, you know, advocating for Palestinians is not enough to keep one safe. And we also have somebody zooming in from Gaza, the International Coordination Unit head, Mohammed Al-Shakra. He's somebody who we've been in touch with in our efforts to build a sister city more generally. The Rebel Peace and Justice Coalition is working on this for just over a year now. And we're really happy to have had some different projects with him going. And, for example, we've just completed a fundraiser. We donated $9,000 during Ramadan for people to eat food and also for kids to get some clothes for the celebration that happens right after Ramadan during Eid. It's custom for Muslims to dress up in their best clothes. And so we were able to also get kids some new clothes for Eid. And just right before that, about a month or two before that, we had donated almost $8,000 again for water distribution that reached 285,000 people. They had like this big water truck that was driving around just about every day out and about in Gaza City, and people were filling up their 5-gallon jugs of water coming from all over the area to do it. And, you know, in some of those days, there was even bombs falling around in the vicinity of the water truck. So, you know, these are very tough times for Palestinians, particularly in Gaza City. And the West Bank, you know, it's very difficult. But when there's somebody who's having a bit of a rough time and you do something nice for them, you feel good about yourself. If somebody's going through an incredibly rough time and you're able to actually do something that makes a material difference in their life, like we've shown is possible, then it actually is a big benefit to the person giving that. And in that case, that's our community here in the Humboldt Bay is able to provide material benefits to people in Gaza and therefore resist genocide in real time. There's just so many different speakers that we have that are so amazing, and their bios are so great. I could literally spend hours just talking about how cool these speakers are. So, for example, we also have Karim Ali, who is the co-founder of Gaza Sunbirds, a professional bicycle team of disabled athletes that is representing Palestine on a global scale. They're competing in the World Championships, but also they're looking to compete in the Paralympics in Los Angeles in 2028. And they just have these incredible stories. For example, many of the Gaza Sunbirds were actually disabled due to being shot in the limbs when they were protesting in a civil disobedience march that was demonstrating to the world in the Great March of Return in 2018 that people in Gaza are being detained like prisoners, but they haven't really done anything wrong. So, you know, this is just one other example of how rich the stories are of our speakers. And we will actually also have some local speakers as well, and some other speakers that maybe I don't have too much more time to get into, but hopefully people can set aside the day 11 to 5 p.m. on Saturday, April 11th, to come check out the second annual Humboldt Radical Social Forum.
There will additionally be more speakers presenting in person, and all presentations will have a Q&A following. The question that the forum poses is, if we think global and act local, what can we do that makes a material difference? Once again, the Humboldt Radical Social Forum will be Saturday, April 11th, from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Arcata Presbyterian Church, and admission is free. For more information, the website is redwoodpeaceandjustice.com. In national news, Mexican consulate speaks out on deaths in ICE custody. KPFA's Brianna Vasquez reports.
Following the recent death of Jose Ramos and many other Hispanic immigrants detained by ICE, the Consulate of Mexico has finally spoken up about these deaths and revealed what they will be doing to protect and help these individuals and their families. General Protection Consulate Vanessa Ruiz spoke about these issues and the causes leading to the many deaths of individuals under custody of immigration authorities.
El caso del señor José Guadalupe no es un hecho aislado.
The case of Mr. Jose Guadalupe is not an isolated incident. It reflects an alarming, unacceptable trend. Since January 2025, the Mexican government has documented 14 deaths of Mexican nationals in the custody of immigration authorities. At the ICE Processing Center in Adelanto, located in San Bernardino County alone, 4 Mexican nationals have died due to apparent medical complications, highlighting a persistent pattern of structural deficiencies. The detention conditions observed in various private detention centers include inadequate infrastructure, insufficient medical care, and a lack of effective oversight and prevention mechanisms, putting the dignity and the lives of those in state custody at risk.
According to the New York Times, quote, 46 people have died in federal immigration custody since President Trump took office last year and began his mass deportation campaign, according to death reports and news releases made public by ICE, end quote. Carlos Gonzalez Gutierrez, Consul General of Mexico in Los Angeles, speaks on the tasks that the consulate will be taking in the near future to prevent deaths from continuing to occur.
Our main obligation is to demand clarity, transparency, and accountability in each case. We do our best to fill the void left by the authorities at the detention center in terms of communicating with the families and the loved ones of those confined. There is almost no flow of information between federal immigration authorities at these detention centers and the families of those detained. We have interviewed 1,809 Mexican nationals in ISB 18. Of those 1,800 people, the vast vast majority has established roots in this country.
With the increase in these deaths, while Hispanic immigrants were in custody of immigration officers, it has caused many to question the treatment and safety of the detention centers. It hasn't just concerned citizens, but concerned the government of Mexico as well. Salvador Precasta Minizabal, Consulate of Mexico in San Bernardino, California, states the concern of the consulate towards this issue.
On behalf of the Consulate of Mexico in San Bernardino, our mandate is clear: to protect the rights, dignity, and integrity of Mexican nationals abroad, especially in context on immigration detention, specifically in California, the southern of California. The government of Mexico views this event with deep concern. We reiterate that Mexican person in immigration detention have the right to dignified treatment. Transparency, accountability, and measures to prevent the recurrence of these events.
While the death of Jose Ramos was one of many, more stories have come to the surface and raised awareness of the treatment that these individuals are under in the detention centers. The family of Jose Ramos are not backing down and want justice for the relative and have contracted the help of attorney Jesus Eduardo Arias.
File two lawsuits on behalf of the two other families that unfortunately are still suffering. And no one should be sent to a place to serve any sentence of pretty much that for a violation of immigration law. No one. We will bring this to the courts, and we are going to look into as well for the rights of Mr. Ramos. The constitutional rights and the human rights are not for sale. That's what we're gonna present this in the court of law. And as well, we are conducting a private investigation, a forensic investigation, to investigate what are the causes of death of Mr. Ramos.
As of now, ICE has not made an effort to communicate with the families of those detained, nor those who have died in the process. The Mexican consulate will continue to push and make changes to the circumstances of the individuals in these facilities and won't stop until the deaths have justice. Brianna Vasquez for KPFA News.
In National Native News, Jill Freitas reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Jill Freitas. New funding is supporting efforts to help fossil fuel-dependent communities in our region adapt to other forms of energy. One of the projects will focus on the Four Corners region, including the Navajo Nation and Hopi Tribe. The Mountain West News Bureau's Caleb Radel has more.
The work is part of an effort led by the nonprofit group Resources for the Future and partner universities. The Four Corners project is backed by about $70,000. And focuses on a Mountain West region long shaped by coal production and power plants, and lately, rising energy costs. Daniel Ramey helps lead the initiative. He says the focus isn't simply on replacing fossil fuel jobs.
It doesn't have to be solar or wind or geothermal or nuclear or anything else. There might be a great opportunity in aerospace, or there might be a great opportunity in some kind of medical sciences, or there might be a great opportunity in tourism.
He says it's about helping tribal communities build new economic paths on their own terms. For National Native News, I'm Caleb Radel.
The Trump administration has placed a one-ton statue of controversial Italian explorer Christopher Columbus on White House grounds. KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio has more.
A national Italian-American coalition gifted it to President Trump. The towering 13-foot statue is actually a replica of one first presented by Ronald Reagan to the city of Baltimore. It was toppled by protesters in 2020, but never replaced. Italian-born Massimo Somma Campagna is part of the national group and president of the AZ Italian-American Chamber of Commerce. He says they celebrate Columbus Day as an American civic holiday.
Not necessarily the individual and the atrocities that he's been known for in the past.
Especially against Native Americans.
I mean, he bragged about abusing indigenous women in his diaries.
David Martinez is Akamel Afam and runs ASU's Institute for Transborder Indigenous Nations. He thinks erecting a statue of Columbus sends a strong message.
Then you're saying that all of the historical trauma that colonization inflicted on Indigenous people was worth it.
Meanwhile, Phoenix and cities across the country are moving swiftly to erase markers of Cesar Chavez following allegations of rape and sexual abuse. Martinez believes Americans would feel differently about the Yuma-born labor rights icon if he came to prominence centuries prior.
If Chavez was 400 years ago, we'd probably be seeing a different reaction right now. More people would be inclined to preserve the historic symbolism of Chavez and ignore the criminal behavior.
Arizona lawmakers are looking to abolish a state holiday named after him. For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
Tribal leaders are raising concerns about potential federal cuts that could impact services across Indian country. The issue came up during a congressional hearing last week in Washington, D.C. on funding for tribal programs. During the hearing, Mark Macaro, president of the National Congress of American Indians, says, quote, "Just this week, we learned that the Bureau of Indian Affairs is planning significant cuts to staff critical on administering programs," end quote. Leaders say those changes could delay funding and disrupt services tribal communities rely on. I'm Jill Freitas.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Katie Phillips, and thanks to our reporters, Brianna Vasquez and Jill Freitas. KMA News is online, and you can find us on KMA.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Nat Cardos.